Welcome to the Modern Masculinity Podcast, where we delve into the depths of what it means to be a man in today's world, and we explore the real-life challenges and triumphs that you and I face every single day. My name is Hector Santi Esteban, and I come with no answers, only questions for some of the most wise, insightful, and grounded men that I know. So get settled in. You're listening to Modern Masculinity. Fellas, what's going on? I hope this episode finds you well, and I really hope that this episode leaves you better than when it found you, because today's guest is in a weird way me. It is a bonus episode from the Vulnerable Man podcast that is hosted by Christopher Veal, and I had the pleasure of joining him the other week on his show. If you're thinking that you're familiar with Christopher's name, he was actually one of our very first episodes, and he invited me on his show to come and talk about some of the things that I've learned here hosting this show, and then also some of the things that I'm just going through on my own. And I thought that it was a really cool opportunity for me to be on the other side.
Welcome to the Vulnerable Man Podcast, a place where real men have real conversations and explore how vulnerability impacts the way they show up as men. Each of us is on our own journey, and nobody gets to be right or wrong here. So kick back, relax, and settle in. Here's your host, Christopher Veal.
Thank you, Laura. Welcome to the Vulnerable Man Podcast, where we explore the intersections of manhood, masculinity, vulnerability, and connection. I am Christopher Veal, and I will be your humanly imperfect guide as we adventure along on this journey. Let us be on our way. In this episode, I am joined by Hector Santi Esteban. Hector is a father of two, an entrepreneur, a podcast producer, and host of the Modern Masculinity Podcast. We get into juggling fatherhood with life, giving our kids tools to build resilience, letting people see our humanity, learning with love, and wolf packs. It makes more sense if you just listen to the whole episode. So let's get started. Back with another episode of the Vulnerable Man Podcast. And today I am welcoming in Hector Santi Esteban. How are you doing, my man?
I'm strong.
Oh.
I'm feeling strong. And I might have shared this with you, but the phrase for me is I feel like a quarterback stepping up in the pocket.
Okay. Pretty fitting since there was some playoffs this weekend.
Yep. Yeah, there's some, and exactly. And just keeping my eyes down the field, mm-hmm. Trying to stay centered.
Right.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Okay, cool. I love the metaphor already. Well, before we're already into the conversation, but before we really dive in, what do you want to share with the audience about yourself so they get a sense of who you are?
Yeah, I'm 32 years old, a father of two. And when I'm not, I like to say wrangling 4 and 5 year olds, there's still a lot of wrangling there. I produce podcasts. That's kind of my day job, if you will, is I have a podcast production company. And when I'm not doing that, I like to stay as active as possible. So fitness and health are a big part of my life. I'm in that jujitsu sort of fanatic phase where all I can think about is training more jujitsu. So those are the things that consume me right now.
Okay, cool. We got just a few things going on. 4 and 5, that's a handful, my man.
Yeah, it was coming off a weekend where I was solo parenting all weekend, and it's a lot. A lot of times I'll need an afternoon to just decompress after mm-hmm. that, because there's an always onness. And I had to do that this morning on a Monday morning when we're recording this. And that shifted a little for me because of circumstances and stuff. But I still knew that if I didn't give myself that time to just settle down, that the activity and the energy, they amaze everybody. They're always going. And I'm like, right. Yeah, it doesn't stop. When we leave here, it'll continue.
It'll continue.
You'll need to sit on your couch and my pace of life will continue right. at the rate, that it's been. So it is a lot. And I've had to build in a lot of things for myself personally to avoid, I've burnt out and I've been the angry dad and the bitter, gone through all those phases. But all that to say, it was a good weekend. We hung out. It was a birthday party. We got some time at grandma's. And so I've gone through enough of those now where I know how to, the word that comes to mind is like attack those so that I don't come out at the end defeated.
Okay. Well, let's dive into this for a second. There's a lot of guys who are juggling the challenge of fatherhood and life and everything. I don't know about you, but my daughter did not come with an instruction manual. What's helped you really step into this role of being a dad?
More recently, it's been surrounding myself with other dads. I'm a younger dad, at least relatively speaking. I'm 32. My kids are 4 and 5. And most of the kids' parents in their classes are 8, 10, 15 years older than me. And so I say that because initially I isolated myself because I didn't have any friends who were also having kids. I had family, but I didn't have any family members who were also having kids. And so the idea of us bringing two babies around to a party that doesn't have any other kids was
not necessarily popular. Yeah.
Yeah. And all that was happening whilst the pandemic and everything. So it was kind of naturally isolating, but I came out of that period really feeling overmatched, out of my league, if you will. I've always seen myself as a very competent person. In school, I did pretty well. In sports, I did relatively well in all league and captain, first honor, you know, like that sort of stuff. So I thought I knew how to achieve business, same sort of thing. But then all of a sudden, you're thrust with like life and a relationship, you know, a human being. And it all kind of, and I don't know if it goes out the window, but it's a lot to deal with all at once if you're not primed and ready for all that comes along with it. Because it can feel, it was never ending. You know, we had our first kid and then we had our second one 13 months later. In between that one, there was an almost. And so it was like, there was a lot of health and medical issues and hospital visits. And it was just like, boom, boom. And then we get through that and like baby's home and like, okay, cool. And then lockdown happens. And it was like, you know, and of course that's kind of unique to, it's not unique to everybody, but that was a lot of life that happened in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
And coming back to it, like now, I make it a point to reach out to guys like you and have conversations. Even if I don't have a reason to reach out, like I might have needed in the past, there are guys on my list where it's like, I want to stay connected and talk because I know that it's helpful for my soul, frankly.
Yeah. Oh, that hits home when you say that. Well, I mean, there was a lot there in what you said. And actually, I want to double click on the last thing you just talked about. I think it's so critically important that we as men build those connections. And that flies in the face of what a lot of men do. So I'm wondering what helped you get to the place of saying, I know I need this and I'm going to do this. Like that connection, knowing that, okay, I need that connection with another guy.
I tried everything else and was failing.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, 2023 was a really rough year. And there were multiple times where I literally wrote down, I was like, I've reached rock bottom. Wow. Thankfully, I've reached rock bottom because it can't get any lower than this, only to look back and 3 weeks later, okay.
Now I've reached bottom. Okay. Now, like this is it.
This is it. And what was interesting is that I wrote that, I journaled that a number of times.
Wow.
And I was like, trying to do this on my own is not like I was reaching for anything. I was grasping at anything. And also realizing that I had no reference point for how to deal with the situations that I was going through. I couldn't look at my parents or uncles, or there was no model to go, okay, here's what you do in this sort of situation. So I just started reaching out. And what was interesting, it was like this vulnerability thing kind of emerges. You know, you reach out to a guy and they're like, well, yeah, I'm kind of going through something a little bit like that. And, and even if they don't have a solution, it's like, well, just the fact that you're going through something similar, there's some solidarity that happens and there's some, the burden feels less. Perhaps our judgment seems to lessen on ourselves, perhaps. And honestly, I'm in a men's group called Front Row Dads, and I just tried it. And I was like, this helped. And so I tried it again, and it helped. And I doubled down on it. And it's like, now it's to the point where even in the moments where things aren't as critical as maybe they once were, where I was really in a desperate point of need, I still have it on my like weekly checklist to like reach out to the guys and just text them. And I've got a message that I sent this morning where like just to connect with a guy because I know that connection is going to make me stronger for whatever is ahead.
You know, and again, I said this before, but a lot of the messaging we often hear as young boys and as young men is you got to figure it out. You can't ever show weakness. So I hear some of it was you had hit that bottom. For the guy that's listening and is like, I don't know if I can do that, or I'm not sure what to do. But what would you offer him for a tip?
Well, there's a couple of quotes that comes to mind. That, you know, that first is that I think someone said it's like not actually an African proverb, and the internet is that old saying of like, if you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together, like that right. sort of thing. That always stuck in my head because I don't know how many times I've burnt out in my life where I just hit the end and I was doing something so well, but just couldn't, the rewards or the money or the whatever was working, but just couldn't sustain that level of activity or output or whatever it was, the mindset. And so I always knew that like there's something I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of my mentors, Philip Folsom, he runs leadership groups with like wolves and stuff. And it's really badass.
Wow, that sounds cool.
And he's a former Marine and he takes these wolves and works with leadership groups. And what the message is though, is that the lone wolf dies.
Right.
Even wolves need a pack.
Right.
Right. And there's the idea of that lone wolf kind of Rambo sort of character. But he's like, that wolf dies. Like that wolf goes out into the forest and is hungry and alone. And it's like the ones who thrive are the ones who find their way
with the pack
within this pack. And there's so many, you know, kind of layers to that. But that sort of thing where it's like this false narrative of the lone wolf or the one guy, the alpha male sort of thing. If people can see that that is some sort of facade or some sort of mask or some sort of, I don't know, however deep down the conspiracy theory rabbit you want, but like that, to see that that's not real.
Right.
And not only is it not helpful, it's like counterproductive to you being the man that's not it. Unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know. That's not it.
Yeah. Again, so many things in what you just said. We're going to be in this conversation for days, I can tell already. A thread I want to pull on that too, and I love this analogy. First of all, I'm really fascinated about this work this guy does with wolves. That's a whole nother conversation we'll have. But as you said it, what it also reminded me of is, you know, my time in the Marine Corps, yes, you have the individuals and like we hear about Medal of Honors, things like that, but the things we accomplished were because we did it. It wasn't any one individual. Yet it's so funny that in our lives, most of the men feel like, well, I have to do it alone. I can't ask for help. What's different about the example you're setting for your kids about the way men can show up?
Yeah, I try and, I guess it's a belief. I'm more of faith that like there's more in the caught than taught thing.
Okay.
And that's mostly because every time I try and teach my son anything, he just has absolutely no interest in listening to anything I have to say.
Right.
So I try and model the things that I know that I wish I would have had. And one of them is in breath work. It was probably a while ago, but we were driving somewhere and both my kids were in the back and something was happening and I was especially triggered. And I felt myself getting really upset and angry, and it could have been a number of circumstances, but I remember just going into my breathing. I just started breathing like, and I didn't say anything to the kids, you know, the radio was still on. And then my son, his name is Cashin, he goes, "Dad, are you breathing?" And I go, "Yeah, I'm breathing." He goes, "Okay." And he went on and it was just so normal. At that moment, I was like, okay, this is normal. He knew that I was going through something. He knew I was upset, right. But he was just like, at home, we're like, when we're upset, what do we do? And we breathe.
Wow.
That's what we do. And so like those types of things are what I'm trying to model in the sense of like tools.
Mm-hmm.
I never had the tools. Like if I had the tools, I could learn the shit out of that tool and I could use it and I could deploy it. But if I don't know what and when to pick up, I needed that. And so similarly on the way to school, when we walk to school, we do affirmation. I grab his hand. Like, I'm strong. And he repeats it. Like, I'm brave. I don't talk about the value of affirmations or I'm like, here's why we're doing it because subconscious programming. Like, we're just doing it and trying to make it as normal as possible. I know there's going to be a moment where he's in school and he's only in kindergarten. I remember when I was in kindergarten feeling scared.
Yes.
Feeling nervous and feeling all the normal things, even as a 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that if I can just prep him, you know, a little bit or give him some tools to try and deal with those are the things that I'm trying to give him because I'm 32 and I'm seeing the value of having these tools now. What if we can go back and really start to build those, what that could look like?
You know, what you're pointing to, I think, is part of the message that I'm trying to share as well, because the way we start to shift the narrative is to model this better way or this newer way of being as a man, you know, and it's giving these kids a tool. So often with young boys, especially, they start to get messaging of there's certain emotions you can have, there's certain ones you can't have, and don't do too much of that. And I love that you are giving him that tool. And even if you don't explain it, he knows how it makes him feel. And that's really where the lesson happens. Yeah. I do something similar with my daughter every day. When we talk, we're like, what's something you're grateful for? That's what we start the day with. And for me, it's about you're setting your mindset for the day of what you're looking at.
Yeah. I mean, I've been wrestling with this a lot recently because I'm big on pointing out the problems. Like, here's why we are where we're at. Mm-hmm. And part of me is like, why are you getting so wrapped up in the problem of these things instead of focusing on the ideal? And that's where I'm at. Like, that's where I'm shifting, because it's like, that's why so many people follow the guys in the Lambos and the guys with mm-hmm. the six pack, because they're speaking to the ideal. What I've also come to realize, though, is that if you can't see yourself out of the place that you're currently in, you're not able to move past that point. It's impossible to have that vision. And so mm-hmm. making it okay. Growing up, my parents were never about acknowledging any issues. Right? Mm-hmm. It was like, we're a perfect family. Everything right. is perfect. And they're not unique in that regard. I don't need to pick on them. It was just like, mm-hmm. that's what it was like. It was like, you put up a front and everybody's happy and everybody's fine. But then you go home and people are miserable, or they're drinking, or they're yelling, or they're whatever it is that they're doing. And no one just wants to acknowledge the fact that, no, we're human. We have emotions. We're sad. Everyone just wants to pretend that it's not there. And I think that's the difference, is like, that we're moving to now. And what I'm trying to give to guys is, we see where you're at. We don't think you have to stay there. We see where you're at. And like, fuck, I know it's hard, but also there is another way. You don't have to stay there. A lot of guys my age are quietly resigning themselves. They're quietly resigning themselves, period, in every aspect of their life. They're resigning themselves to the fact that they're going to be single, that they're going to live at home, that they're going to be whatever. Like, they're kind of living in the circumstance because things have been so hard. And I think it's because they're not willing to acknowledge that, like, well, no, it's okay to be hard. This is part of the process, not right. the result.
Right. You know, one of the things, as you're talking about, where people put up this front a lot, is that's why I'm a big critic of social media, because I think a lot of the times we put up this front, we have this picture perfect life, but nobody really says what's going on behind the scenes. And when we see all our friends and everybody on our social media feeds have these perfect lives, and we go, well, I don't have that, we're less likely to open up. So for you, I'm curious, because we're talking about vulnerability, what does vulnerability mean to you?
I think vulnerability is, the image that comes to mind is taking off the mask. Mm-hmm. Whatever is behind that mask, and being able to be okay with whatever is behind there, right? Like, I'm reminded of that scene in A Man with the Iron Mask with Leonardo DiCaprio, right? Mm-hmm. There's this like scene at the end where he's finally taking off his mask and he's all covered in hair and he's hairy. And it's like, in that moment, though, he realizes his worth. Without the mask, therein lies the value. And I think it's when we can get comfortable with that place. And perhaps there's an added element of offering that place to someone else and says, like, here's where I am, and I'm offering this branch to you, because chances are you're probably in a similar place. It seems to be a two-part connection. Of course, you can be vulnerable with yourself, but that's in a unique way. Like, in order to be vulnerable, there needs to be a vulnerability to something. And I think that that's what it is when you're able to take off that mask and go, here's who I actually am, and to be okay with whatever happens, be okay with the rejection, the acceptance, the love, the whatever, because that's the vulnerability. And I think that, to your point, not enough guys especially are willing to take off that mask and to say, here's who I am, take it or leave it, because right. we're so, I don't know if it's brainwashed or programmed or matrixed or whatever, to think that this is the way. And if I act out of accordance with this way, then I'm not worthy of love, or I'm not good enough, or whatever that wound that we're trying to protect. And when we're able to take it off and go, here's who I am, and I'm still worthy of just as much love.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the moment of vulnerability.
Yes. Well, you've clearly done work around this. I mean, that's apparent. And even as I hear you talking about it and your willingness to be in this conversation, what helped you get to this point in your life?
Life? Disaster? One of my favorite songs right now, I sing it with my daughter. It's called Knocked Down by Tim Timebaum, or Rancid, I think, has a version. But there's a lyric in there that it says, it takes disaster to learn our lesson.
Oh,
I sing it so loud. Me and my daughter, we sing it. And I've cried to that song too. And it's like, that unfortunately is the truth. 2023 was the hardest year of my relatively cushioned, privileged, Western, Americanized sort of life. I'm Hispanic and I'm Mexican, but I'm fair skinned. So, you know, a lot of people, they group me in with, you could say I'm a Western white guy and you know, nobody would really get upset. And so I say all right. that with so much privilege, but also emotionally, financially, I was just really pushed to the limit. And what I'm grateful for is that amidst all those, that I kept looking for lessons and I kept looking for, okay, well, what does this mean? How do I learn? How do I grow? Okay, so now what? Because I know that if we could have picked any number of these challenges, that it would have been so easy for me to go, this is it. This isn't worth it. This is too much. Yeah. I understand why men are doing what they're doing with their lives at the rate that they're doing.
You know?
I could see the moments. There's moments. It's a decision. It's like, do I want to stay here or do I want to go there? And I've continued to use those experiences, those life events, divine intervention sometimes where I'm like, I feel like Job sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with the story of Job in the Bible. He's like the guy that God tests and he's like, we're going to see how much you,
how much you can take. Yeah.
Yeah. And I lean on that a little bit. I'm not religious, but I lean on those types of things because it's like, it's not the end. Mm-hmm. You know, there's another quote. I don't know who said it, but Shia LaBeouf made it famous on a reel recently. He said, in the end, everything's going to be okay. And if it's not okay, it's not the end. And I go back to that so much. I repeat that to myself. It's like, in the end, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay. It's not
the end. It's not the end.
And I just keep going.
Okay. I am definitely going to be using that one because that hit home too. Yeah. I want to talk about modern masculinity in a moment as well. I'm also curious, you interact with a lot of men. So what's it like when you bring some vulnerability, regardless of how it's received? What's helped you keep leaning into it? Maybe that's the question.
The responses I get from the manliest of men, mm-hmm. right? Guys like you who've done real, real hard stuff. When I see the way that they respond to authenticity and vulnerability, or when I share some of the things that I'm going through, and there's so much solidarity. And I think that for me has been so huge that you think that by being vulnerable or authentic or whatever word that you want to pick, that guys are going to shun you or that guys are going to, whatever the word is, exclude, or I don't know the word I'm trying to find, but you think that they're going to reject you essentially.
Yeah.
When almost exclusively, it's the opposite. And I've realized that in any of the instances where it wasn't received well, it was usually because of their inability to cross that bridge themselves. It was usually not any judgment. It was like, wow, I'm not able to meet you there.
Yeah. I'm not ready to be with that. Yeah. Right.
That's usually what it was. But otherwise, it's like, holy crap. And I don't know where I learned that early on. In doing the conversations, it's like, what is there to hide? And maybe I'm good at dressing stuff up. But I've realized that by saying what's real, like that's the quickest way to connect and then cut through all of the exterior, all of the mass much quicker.
Yeah. Have you crossed paths with Ashanti Branch?
No.
Okay. I need to connect you too because you keep talking about mass. That's a lot of what he does. So we'll talk more about that after. Let's talk about modern masculinity because you're also doing your spin on things around these conversations and men and masculinity. And I'd love to hear what inspired you to do that. And as you keep coming back to that.
Yeah, I mentioned that 2023 was a really challenging year of my life. And, you know, my business that I run is a podcast production company. And, you know, typically we produce shows in the marketing and entrepreneurship and kind of business space. But I was looking for any and all answers that I could. And so I'm like, well, let's just start a podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm good at asking questions. And I say it in my intro, I'm like, I don't have any answers. I only have questions. So it began and it was born out of my own. The first word was helplessness, but that's how I felt. Like I felt like totally helpless. And so I just started doing anything that I could. And what was interesting and how that played out is that, like similarly, we look at these challenges and I could have gone, well, why did this happen in my life? Why did these things happen in my relationship? Why did these things happen financially? Why? Like I could have asked all these whys when here was a clear answer. It was like, mm-hmm. you were being shoved onto this path right here. This was the path you needed to be on. And since then, we've interviewed about 75 guys across all types of things that touch masculinity, from finances to physical health and emotional health, mental health. And what's just interesting though, is that for me, similar to what you're doing, I knew that guys who are my age, you know, millennial kind of guys, didn't have a roadmap to these things. And also the benefit that a lot of guys, and I'm kind of grouping, you know, stereotyping mm-hmm. you guys, but Gen Xers and boomers, a lot of them are a little more progressed in their relationships. They're married, their kids are older, they're settled. They've gone through a lot of that life. And of mm-hmm. course, life is not easy right now, economically, politically. Like, of course, there's all these things that are kind of, but what's an added thing that a lot of millennial guys are going through now is that their relationships are not as established. The relationships, mm-hmm. the dating world isn't what it was 5, 6, 7, 8 years right. ago, even. Like we talked about with social media and all the things that are going on socially, it's so compressed. And then to all of a sudden take a mindset that was born out of this, you go to school, you get a job, you get a good degree, you find a spouse, mm-hmm. you get the house, you have the, like,
the 2.3 kids. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. There was a path, like a success path, right? Mm-hmm. To carry that mindset into today is just asking for shit. You look at divorce rates, you look at single, like, you can't ignore where trends are. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, okay, if this is where it's going, we don't have to accept that, but how do we brace ourselves? How do we steel ourselves? How do we improve ourselves? Because I still think that there is a way that men can thrive and relationships can thrive, and but we can't do it the same way. We can't right. use the old model and take that mindset into what we're doing now. And that's what I'm trying to do, is provide some sort of context for these guys who are all of a sudden trying to figure out all these different aspects of life while the world can't even figure out its own shit,
right.
you know, yeah. at the same time. So yeah. That's what the show is kind of about.
What has been an unexpected gift or surprise for you from doing the podcast?
Meeting guys like you. I kind of knew that was going to be a benefit. And of course, people will tell you have a podcast. Yeah, you're great for connections and network. And yeah, for sure. I can look at my network and go, yeah, I've added a lot of really cool people to my network. And if I were into vanity stuff and like that right. sort of thing, I would say, yeah, like I got to interview so-and-so and I got to interview the author of this book. That's cool. But I can't tell you how many of those guys have turned into like real friends where we text and we talk and we cry and we share life together. That's been a huge gift. And I think that whether you find it through a show or whether you find it through a men's group or a church or whatever, like having guys that you can do that with is so valuable. You know, another thing that I didn't touch on before is that early on in this kind of journey, they talk about being in touch with your emotions, being in touch with, you know, your feelings and that person. And I think that's important. What they don't really tell you is that doesn't mean just to dump it all on your family. Doesn't mean to just yes. okay, you're in touch with your emotions, so you're going to be an asshole.
Or yeah.
you're
gonna don't unload on everybody with it. Yeah.
Yeah, that concept of unloading and processing was like, okay, I've got all these emotions. I was like, it needs to go somewhere. Dump it on my wife. That didn't work. That was, right. that did not work. And so I needed to find this place. It was like, okay, and I wasn't a big journaler, and I'm not really. It was like, well, where does this go? And I was part of a men's group, and I was at a retreat, and it was like, here's where this can go. Men can hold this space.
Yep.
Because that's what we can do. But it's hard for someone who's not a man to hold that level of space that's required to give it to even a grandma or a son or a nephew or and maybe a nephew one day, but like a knee, like there's just something about being vulnerable with a man that's different.
You know, I think one of the things I love, and so thank you for pointing that out and that I've appreciated because I've been in men's groups too. We can bring that stuff and we're not bringing it expecting those other guys to solve it. And I think that's one of the things where we get to let go of that man box type of thinking of we've always got to be solving problems. Like we just get to say, man, here's something I'm struggling with. And other guys similar to what you said before, like, I hear you. Whether they can relate to it or not, I think if we help men start to really connect with those kind of spaces and they're able to process it there, like you said, they show up differently in their relationships.
Totally different. Yeah. I mean, on a practical daily level, if I don't get up before my kids, I'm a different guy. Recently, I've been jumping in the cold, and I live in Southern California, so cold showers are not always very cold, but this time of year, they're actually relatively cold. So I'll do a cold shower and shake off all of the anxiety and all the whatever. I see the contrast when I sleep in or they wake me up and I'm not as present. I'm not as focused. And in that same way, when you unload or you give whatever that is, you let that off, you're able to walk into life so much lighter and freer and present, perhaps.
Yeah. What do you want your son to say about the father you were?
Oh, one of my deepest fears is like him thinking I'm a bad father. Like that's one of my deepest fears is him coming away that I was a bad. And I don't know where that comes from. I don't think my dad was a bad father. My dad was very present by those standards. You know, he was my coach. Took me to school. So he was like physically there. Now, was he emotionally present? Probably not, but he wasn't any more or less emotionally present than any of the other dads of the 90s.
Yeah.
So not to single him out in any way.
Yeah.
But there is this weird, like if I had to choose, I would choose to be like people to look at me as a bad entrepreneur before they look at me as a bad father. That sort of thing. So, man, I think it's perhaps my own expectations of myself. Like, what do I want him to, like, that he was a good dad? Like, that's what I want him to believe. But when I go down into him, like, my own judgments and expectations of what I need to be in my head start to fill out. And it's like, yeah, I want to, yeah, it is the things that I didn't get. I want to be the dad that can be there emotionally for him.
Yeah.
You know, that he can go to when he's going through a breakup or things are hard. And yeah. Which is, I think, important for guys, you know, boys and stuff. So that's what it would be, that we were connected emotionally more than just, you know, he was my son or I was his dad.
Well, in the small handful of interactions I've had with you, I see you showing up that way. And so I'm just telling you, you're on the right path, my man. You bring authenticity that a lot of guys don't. So trust yourself in that.
I appreciate that.
Not that you need my vote of confidence, but I'm just telling you, I see it in you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah. Speaking of vulnerability, if you could go back to a younger version of yourself and give him a message about it, what would that message be?
Saying it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It's not the end. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've had to do that this year and go back and reparent myself and sit with a lot of those experiences that I hadn't really ever sat with growing up and that I had just pushed away. And all of a sudden, life starts to happen this year. Triggers start to come up. And it's like, well, where are all these things coming from? Where are all these? And it was just undoing and undoing. And then for me, there was a lot of breathwork sessions where I went back to my 8-year-old self and was just like, it's going to be like, it hurts. I know, but like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, the pain is okay. Like, we don't have to run from the pain, the emotional pain. I remember waking up in eighth grade and going through like a middle school breakup or, I don't know, girlfriends going to high school.
Right. It feels like the end of the world, right? Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Literally, I would wake up and I would vomit. I would just like, my stomach would be in knots and I would be puking. And my mom, she's like, oh, yeah, when you get emotional, like, you get like that. She saw that as normal.
Right.
Right. But also for me, I didn't have the tools and it was so painful that I shoved any inkling of that feeling away for 20 some odd years.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it was the needing to undo all of that and to be okay with all of that, not react to a situation that's happening in my 30s like my 8-year-old self would react.
Right. You know, I think that points back to a comment you made earlier about we need to teach this next generation of boys how to be with emotions. Some things I know now, if I had known them 20, 30, 40 years ago, I don't know. I don't know what the difference would have been. But I don't know if, again, not knocking parents of my generation either, but I don't know if that was the common theme. And I think that's part of the work that you're doing and the way you're showing up as a father and other men are starting to do. And I think that's going to pay us dividends in this next generation of young men. So that's just my hope, maybe. I don't know.
Well, things are shifting. One of the other things that's emerged from doing these interviews is that things are definitely shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And the women's movement has been succeeding and excelling for decades. They're now, I don't want to say they're now at their hitting their peak, but like you look at all the statistics and women in college and of course earnings and salaries. But in terms of trends and trajectories, this is as best as it's been for women.
Mm-hmm.
And not to take anything away from any of them. We absolutely need women in the board. Like they need to do all that. The challenge is that we've not given men the blueprint to thrive alongside them, nor have we helped the women to see that there is an opportunity to thrive alongside. And I don't blame the way that they're reacting. They're like, you know, you guys have been assholes to us.
Patriarchy is, absolutely.
You know, so to all of a sudden ask for like compassionate treatment is like, I totally get that. But that's what we're missing is that now we have women who are growing up. You know, there's a song that my daughter unfortunately knows the words to that says, I don't need a man, I need a puppy.
Mm.
And I get so upset when she hears that because it's not either or, it's like and or both. It's like we can both thrive here. And that's what we're missing is, A, guys, the mindset that we had before is not going to work, right? We can't just make money and then come home, or like that's not the only delineator, but it also is. It also is important, and guys have to realize that too. That we can't throw out the baby water, but we have to be willing to adjust to these new circumstances, and that's where we're at, figuring that out.
We could go on for days with this. I'm appreciating just your realness for this conversation. Before we wrap up, if people want to find you and find out more about you, where do they go?
If you're interested in this sort of stuff and you're listening to this show, you'll probably enjoy Modern Masculinity, or you or your son or someone who's coming up. Modern Masculinity, we're available on all the podcast platforms. If you want to connect with me personally, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter at Hector_podcast is the easiest place to find me.
Yeah. And I'll drop those links in the episode description too. I just want to say again, thank you. I know we've had a number of conversations and I've just always appreciated the way you bring yourself unfiltered. And that's what I'm wanting more of for men in this world. So thank you for being you, my man.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Any final thoughts you want to drop before we end this conversation for the moment?
No, I think that if you are doing this work and you're listening to this podcast, you are doing the work. The only shift that we didn't talk about today, which is a shift I'm still going through, is this ability to learn with love. And what I mean by that is that if you're listening to this, you probably have high expectations of yourself. You're chasing, you're striving, you're growing. And too many times I measure myself against the gap, not looking at the gain. And not looking at where I'm going, but constantly looking at the imperfections. And what I'm trying to do now is to learn and love myself as I'm learning, to give myself the compassion, to not judge myself. That's all I can say, is to learn with love. And that all of a sudden comes with a totally different energy. We are able to look at setbacks and challenges and fuck ups. Those things all of a sudden become part of the process, and they become, mm-hmm. Part of the way. As opposed to what I used to ascribe them to, which is, a sentence. That's what I thought it was. I thought it was a verdict, not the process.
Yeah. So learn with love. That is a great teaser. I'm just going to have you come back on the podcast so we can go deep into that conversation.
Yeah, happy to.
Awesome, my man. Will you be well, and we will keep in touch. My thanks once again to my guest, Hector Santiesteban. If you want to learn more about him, see the links in the episode description. If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to subscribe so you can get new episodes as they are released. Feel free to share it with someone that might enjoy it. If you have thoughts or comments about this episode, or simply want to connect, you can reach me at onevulnerableman@gmail.com. That's the number one. And the website is vulnerable-man.com. Thank you again for listening. And remember to make each day matter.